Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram, wherever you're listening or watching. It's all good. We appreciate it. And this is our last live show of 2024, oh, Pete.
All right. 2-4. Yeah. Peace out, man.
Unless, I mean, up to you. Next week, next Tuesday is Christmas Eve, and the week after that is New Year's Eve. You want to do... We'll just do a live show, right? You
yeah.
Just come on.
Yeah.
Skip whatever great. You have planned. Sound good?
Yeah. Let's just talk comics. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'll be doing anyway, just in the privacy of my own home, talking to nobody, not online. We will have some stuff to roll out for all of you over the course of the weeks. Don't worry about that. Stay tuned for info in your podcast feeds. And we will be back, as I'll plug later, on January 7th. I'm also going to keep plugging that we are going to be in New Orleans.
Yes.
January
Come
10th.
Come on down. Hang Come out with down. Us. Eat amazing food. It'll be glorious.
Yeah, we're also going to talk comics. Friday, January 10th, 8 p.m. ET at Brew Carré, a brewery down in New Orleans. We're going to be doing a show. Our guest is going to be Gavin Guidry, who is an artist who's done Superman 78 for DC Comics and a bunch of other things. And as Pete mentioned, it's going to be at this brewery with upstairs. They have a restaurant called Shift from our good friend Brett Macris.
Can't wait to check out Shift.
Cannot wait. He shares the menus in our Patreon Slack every week. And oh, man, I'm going to eat everything. I don't even think we're going to do a show. I'm just going to eat all the food.
I'm going to eat my way through New Orleans. It's going to be glorious.
And the next day on January 11th, we're actually going to be doing a show at 4 p.m. at the Fan Expo New Orleans as well. More details on that. But as this is the last live show, figured I'd let people know. There you go. Oh, and one other item of business I'll mention at the front. We talked about some of the changes to our Patreon last week. We have another change, another heavily requested change. We now have annual memberships for the Patreon, patreon.com/comicbookclub. And they give you a discount, which is the equivalent of getting 2 months free.
Whoa, what a deal.
There you go. And that comes directly out of Pete's paycheck. So.
Oh, exciting.
But really, patreon.com/comicbookclub. They're pretty cheap anyway. I think you can get the lowest plan for like $20 for an entire year supporting this podcast.
Wow.
We appreciate it, whether you can or not, whether you're listening or not. It's all good. And we have two great guests for you this evening for our last live show. Why don't we, without any further delay, bring in our first one of our favorite guys to chat with here on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Neil Clyde. Neil, welcome. Hello, you're on mute. Unmute yourself and let's chat.
Welcome back, Neil. Great to see you.
Hey, guys.
Hi. Yeah. So good to see you. Happy advanced holidays to you and your family.
Great time to be a Lions fan, man. Congratulations.
Well, you know, we're doing having a good year.
I'd say so.
Sunday was kind of rough. Mm-hmm. It was the red wedding of Lions games. We lost.
I know Red Wedding was where you had me up until and then I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, we just lost a lot of players.
I know what Lions are. I saw Wicked.
Yes, oh, congrats.
They are cowardly, but they're also gritty. They're gritty and ready for the Super Bowl. So
yes.
Let's talk about comics and not Lions.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about the Super Bowl of comics, as I like to call it. Kings and Canvas, which is a book you've been working on in different aspects for a very long time now. I think originally came out digitally in 2015. Yeah. And then last year it hit Kickstarter successfully. And now it is out in massive collected form from Outland.
Congratulations.
And CEX Publishing. People can get it now. I swear I have not gone back and checked, but I have to imagine over the years we have already talked about this book at some point. But it was great revisiting it. It is about a boxer. Well, it's a prisoner who travels across the land, boxing various people and monsters. Very, very fun. Talk a little bit. I know you've talked about this to death over the past decade, but talk a little bit about the genesis of this idea.
So it's an interesting book. And to your point, yes, like it's been evolving ever since 2015. It was a digital book at first, and we did 5 issues of it. And the concept was really based off something I had heard or read or something on the internet, which was basically like the words Frank Miller and dinosaur. And the idea of like a Frank Miller dinosaur really kind of appealed to me, because I had this idea of like some like aging, like Daredevil style boxer who had like wrapped up hands and was like some sort of like criminal or former criminal who worked down in Hell's Kitchen. And I had done this like real quick sketch and sent it to some, said like, I really want to do this story about a guy who has been in jail or prison for years, for like 10 years, and comes out and has to like reacclimate themselves to the criminal like landscape. And that was really the like the first concept of like, it wasn't even about boxing. It was just about like a guy who's life and career has sort of passed him by, and now he has to reinvent himself. And it was very noir and what have you. And then I had started boxing on my own at like my local gym, and I was watching Game of Thrones, and I was like, wouldn't it be cool if this was some sort of like fantasy adventure story? And everything kind of like spilled into one another, this concept of like boxing as jousting. And so there were a lot of like really great influences on the book itself. And it really landed in this concept where you've got this guy who has been in prison for 10 years, this our lead character, Mammoth, and breaks out of prison to go reconnect with his family. But he was this really great former boxer. And the idea of, like, again, jousting as boxing really informing the sense of, like, a world in which instead of using swords or guns to have your wars, it's all about like your fists. It's about the concept of like using your hands to really solve and the rules of boxing to really solve problems. And this guy who was like a champion who had to really relearn his place in the world, because he's no longer a champion now, he's got to be a trainer. Right now he's got to take everything that he's learned and really hand it off to the new generation. And so part of it was also inspired by the sense of like me figuring out like what I wanted to do with my career as a writer, as like within comics, and trying to say like, should I be like a writer? Should I be an editor? Should I really like take what I've learned in comics and really apply it to like a new aspect of what I've done? Because I was having trouble getting like projects off the ground, and it was really conceived in a period in my career in which I had nothing going on, right? I had done, I think in 2010 had been the last graphic novel I had written. And then I had done some like prose novels. And so it was like, what kind of writer do I want to be? What kind of creator do I want to be? And I had to sort of ask myself the question of like, has my writing career passed me by? Should I now do something different? And so that a lot of that really like dealt, like put itself into the work itself. It was about this guy who had to figure out like, if my career has passed me by, who am I in this new world, both to myself, to my family, to my friends? And that's really what the book is about. The book is about like reinventing yourself in a bold new world. And we did 5 issues digitally through Monkey Brain Comics, which was, if folks remember, a publisher that was doing a lot of like digital comics at the time. They did Bandette with Paul Tobin and Colleen Coover. They worked with Steve Bryan, a bunch of other folks. And we were the last book on that ship. And then we did 5 issues and then never got to do the 6th issue. It was myself, Jake Allen, who I did Brownsville with, and Frank Reynoso, who I've done some other work with. And so last year we got to crowdfund the final collection with the 6th issue we never got to do, which wrapped up the first arc. It funded. We were happy. And so now it's in stores this week, next week, wherever you are. I don't know how your shipping works, but it'll be in stores for the holidays.
Now, I did want to ask you about something you said earlier. You said that you were boxing, and I was, when I was reading the book, I was kind of curious about it, just the genesis of it. So it sounds like you like boxing, obviously, and are into boxing. What draws you to it? Because I will say it's something that I'm not necessarily into, no judgment or anything like that, but obviously somebody like you is very drawn to that sport.
So I was boxing at my local gym. It was, I had joined a, like at the time, like a crunch gym downtown, and I was doing like, you know, treadmill work and whatever. And they came to me and said like, hey, just, you know, we have boxing classes. I'm like, why do you think I'd be into boxing classes? And they're like, you kind of look like a, you've got that frame, which meant like, hey, you're fat, come like work out a little bit more than just the general, like getting on a treadmill. And so I started to take once a week, like boxing classes where they basically like had you do a bunch of exercises and then like work a heavy bag and then get in the ring with like one of their trainers, which was really interesting because the first time I did it, like I've been in a few fights in my life, but there's that moment where you're like in the boxing ring with a trainer and it's, he was this like really built like Russian guy. And we're like running around the canvas and we're both kind of like holding up our fists and kind of getting ready. And he kind of looked at me and he's like, all right, here we go. And then he kind of came at me. And the first thing that kind of went through my mind was, all right, Neil, you're about to get hit in the face. And that's what happened. And like I did the first spar with the guy. And then I didn't so much like the ring part of it, but I really enjoyed like the rituals of like hitting a heavy bag or working with a trainer where you were kind of going, he was holding up like pads and you're kind of hitting one fist after the other. And I got to do a little bit of research on like the history of boxing, like the Queensberry rule, like Marquis de Queensberry rules of like how boxing kind of got invented. And it really, I think Game of Thrones was really big at the time. Like, I can't like look at the years, but like 2015, I think Game of Thrones was up on HBO. And it was just like this weird confluence where I was watching Game of Thrones and thinking like, if you thought about it, like jousting and boxing kind of go a little bit hand in hand. And there's this sense of like rules of like engagement and like a gentleman's rule of agreement. And I thought like, there's a lot of really great relatable comparisons between boxing and jousting. And that really kind of was what took me away from this like Frank Miller crime noir story into a more specific like boxing fantasy story.
Now, why do you think people don't box on horses, to your point? Because it's basically the same thing. Like you can be on the back of a horse.
Because I think there's like an awkward aspect to like passing somebody and have to like kind of reach out and hit them, and then you might fall off the horse.
But I think it's because you got to cut the horse in, you know what I mean? And it's just like there's only so much money to go around. Yeah. First off, this congratulations, Neil. This is a blast. I love this, and I also like the. It's funny to hear how this all kind of started because I just read the kind of story and really love the dragon parts and the whole stuff about the gloves and stuff. Just really kind of cool. And to me, it felt like that was always part of it and such a kind of interesting origin story. And it's fun to kind of hear how it all kind of layered in and kind of happened. I'm so happy that it did happen that way because this is, congratulations. Thank you. This is epic on a lot of levels and really satisfactory. A lot of times you go on these rides with these characters and you get to the end and you're like, I don't know if that was worth it. This is really pays off well, man. I don't have questions. I just wanted to say congratulations.
I appreciate that. Well, I mean, one of the great things about this was, and I was actually talking to some folks in the industry last night about just like my career and whatever. Like, this was the first time where I got a chance to do something that was supposed to be ongoing, right? Like, for me, like, if you followed my career at all, a lot of the work that I've done is like standalone, right? Like, I've done a novel here, I've done 5 issues of a mini series or what have you. And that's been fun. Like, I enjoy doing all that, like telling like a packed story. But Kings of Canvas was the first time where like Monkey Brain really invested in us and said, hey, we want it ongoing here. And, you know, Jake was really kind of on board for it. And he's done some amazing world building work here. And there was this sense of like, hey, we're going to do this for a while. We're going to do a couple of arcs and it'll be cool. And then whenever, you know, like, this is the industry, like, things kind of didn't come together and we got to do five issues and that was that. But like, we've always conceived it as like a very holistic world, right? Like, there's a lot of world building that's involved. There's like really deep character development that we've done. Ultimately, we'd love to do more than just, you know, what you see in the collection that's out, you know, this week and next week, which is really the first arc, and really explore Mammoth's journey all the way through fruition. But again, it's the comics industry, so it is what it is. So we were really happy to be able to do it, and I was really happy to be able to try my hand at something that we felt was kind of an ongoing. And people really reacted well to it, A, when it came out digitally, and then B, when we crowdfunded it last year. And I'm hoping that people flock to it as it comes out in stores this week. Because I'll be honest, and I don't really use this lightly, but it's probably one of the best things I've ever written. And some of the characters in it really, really appeal to me. And it's hard for me to say, like, hey, this is it. Like, I would love to be able to continue the story and tell the story. And I've written some other things on the side, like a novel, like that sort of in spec state here, and, you know, some other comics here. And they kind of tie into the same world, right? Like, I kind of want to, like, if you think of, like, Stephen King, right? Like, Stephen King, who did The Dark Tower, and a lot of his stuff tie into Midworld, right? Like, all of his, obviously, The Dark Tower cycle, but all of his other books have a connection to that, like, Uber story. Like, I would say that Kings and Canvas is that for me. And I have projects that really live, like, in the future of this world, in the past of this world, and hopefully one day, God willing, you know, I'll be able to tell that story. But Pete, I do appreciate that, because we really put our heart and soul into this, and we'd love to be able to tell more of it.
Plus, the artist really killed it. I mean, if you're going to follow somebody and go on a journey, one, you got to think they're, like, worth it, and the art really helps kind of, like, immediately get you on their side. And the action, the way sometimes you read comics and the action's done so poorly, it doesn't make you, but you really look forward to what you build towards, and because the art's so good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm blessed to have been able to work with Jake Allen twice, right? Once with Brownsville, which was really my first graphic novel that I ever did, which, if you haven't read it, is about the Jewish mafia, and then be able to kind of work with Jake on on Kings of Canvas. And even if you look at, like, eventually, if you pick up the book, right, if you look at the differences in the art evolution between the first five issues and the last issue, the sixth issue, which you can only get in the book, you couldn't get this digitally, you can see just how much his art has continued to progress and continue to evolve. And he's really, like, done the time and done the work on bettering himself as an artist. And really, I think more people should be working with Jake, to be honest with you. I'm really, really blessed to have been working. And Frank, obviously, who does the colors, Frank and I worked with John Broglia last year. I think we talked about a book called Nice Jewish Boys that we did with Comixology. And Frank and John and I did a book called Saver for Dark Horse. And Frank is a fantastic colorist, and I will continue to work with him because I think he's just amazing.
Cool. We got a question here from the comments over on YouTube. This is Schoichler says, one of the prose novels was the adaptation of Craven's Last Hunt. What goes into adapting a character like that? And to be clear, I think what he's saying is, what goes into adapting a character like that into the feature film, which you wrote, directed, and starred in, I believe?
Yes. I oiled myself up really well with a lion skin.
You look great. And the boxing is working.
Yeah, really paid off.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The boxing has paid off. Tell my wife, because, you know, she loves Aaron Taylor John. What goes into adapting a character like that? Look, I have told folks that when I was a kid, the way I got into comics was my father used to come home after a long day's work and toss me and my brother a bag of comics he got from the, like, rack at the bookstore, and basically say, like, hey, leave me alone, go read this. And one of the first, we did a lot of, like, Marvel 2-in-1, Marvel team-ups, but one of the first amazing Spider-Man arcs that I actually read as a kid was Kraven's Last Hunt, which was this, you know, obviously the classic seminal Kraven story from 1986 by James DeMatteis and Mike Zeck. It's, if you haven't read Kraven's Last Hunt, you haven't read Spider-Man. I feel like it's one of the best Spider-Man series storylines ever made. And it's like super deep, super psychological, super dark, really kind of dives into all the characters that are involved. And what I tried to do was honor that work. You know, when you think about like a prose novel versus a comics novel, like the different, the key difference is there's no pictures, right? And so what I tried to do was use Mike Zeck's artwork as kind of like the roadmap, the blueprint for the visuals I was trying to convey via words to the reader. So I would go through the panels and try to basically just describe what I was seeing to the reader and then expand upon that in terms of like how we were getting into the psychology of the four main characters in that book, which are, who are Peter, Mary Jane, Kraven, and Vermin, right? If you go back and you read those are the really the four key characters in Kraven's Last Hunt. And so what prose allows you to do versus a 22-page issue is really kind of dive into the psychology of each of those characters and understand what's going on, not in the surface visuals, but within their head. And that was really kind of what drives us forward. Like, how do we get into what Mary Jane's thinking, what Kraven's thinking, what have you? It's a lot of work. There's a lot of math involved. Understanding, like, if I have six issues, how do I kind of break down those six issues into, you know, an $85,000 story?
$85,000
story. Yes, that's how much I made.
Okay, now we know.
Yes.
So you get a dollar a word? Is that
85,000 word story? And so that's really what it is. It's about just thinking of the math and the economy of the prose, but also using the comics as kind of your roadmap to present this and honor this story that was created by two geniuses.
Well, it sounds like a nice full circle moment where you got to take something that kind of pulled you into comics and got to kind of expand on it. And, you know, it sounded like you were the perfect person for that. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, and I got really lucky, actually. I ran into the editor, Stuart Moore, literally in Brooklyn. I had just done another prose novel, and Stuart and I ran into each other, and he's like, what are you working on? And I said, oh, I got this prose book. And he's like, cool. James DeMatteis was supposed to adapt his own work, but he doesn't have the time to do it. Are you into Kraven's Last Hunt? And I'm like,
am I?
Yes. And so it was like a privilege and an honor to basically be asked to do it. And Stuart and I had been looking to do something for a while now, and he was editing the Marvel books, prose books at the time. And I got to chat with James DeMatteis a little bit before I kind of dove in and asked him some questions and wanted to make sure that I didn't do anything that really stepped on his toes or stepped on or like really like did anything to the original work. And it was a blast. Like, I really had a fun time doing it. And to your point, Pete, like, it was kind of a privilege to be able to adapt this book that really shaped me as a comics reader when I was younger.
Yeah, that's cool.
And so, yeah, like, when somebody's ready to have me adapt the old G.I. Joe comics into novels, I am there.
Just to bring it back for a second, so people, as you mentioned, Kraven's Last Hunt, the novel has been out for a while, but if people are interested after the movie, maybe that's a terrible plug, but they can, maybe instead of the movie, there you go, you could spend the money on the book.
How about in addition to the movie?
Sure. You can say that.
You haven't seen the movie. That's why you're saying
so that. I saw the first 8 minutes online, and it was fine. And I'm excited to actually see the movie. But yes, please pick up. What I would recommend is you pick up the comics first and then the novel.
There you go. But what else is going on? Anything else you want to plug before we let you
go? Yeah. So I did a book for Comixology last year called Nice Jewish Boys, which is a lovely, intimate Jewish crime story set in New Jersey that is available via Comixology, via Amazon Kindle. So check that out. That's actually a fun little book. And then I'm doing another book for Comixology, which will come out next year that I can't talk about yet, but it's definitely a departure from the first one. Well, not the first one. This is actually my second. I did a book called The Panic beforehand. So it's a lot more fun. It's a lot more Simon Bisley-esque. Bisley? Do we know?
Beisley?
Beisley?
Sure. Beisley? I always thought it was Beisley.
I thought it was Beisley too, but you never know. I don't know. But it's got, it's very much inspired by some of his old Lobo books. And so that one will come out hopefully fall of 25. And then Kings of Canvas comes out tomorrow or next week or depending on your store. Check it out. Tell your story you want more of it so we can do more of it.
Yeah, it's awesome. A great read.
Neil, thank you so much for coming on. Happy New Year in advance. Yeah. Great seeing you.
Happy holidays, folks.
Happy holidays.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
All right, there we go. Once again, that was Neil Clyde. The book is called Kings and Canvas, and you can get it, as he said, out this week, perhaps next week, from Outland Entertainment and CEX Publishing.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Why don't we bring in our next guest?
We should.
No pressure, but our final guest of 2024.
Oh, man, why do that to him?
I don't know why. He is, among many other things, the writer of Silver Hawks. I don't know why I just said it like that. Silver Hawks. Silver Hawks.
There you go.
Oh, my God. You're going to have to introduce this, Pete. Coming out in January from Dynamite, ladies and gentlemen, and Bryson.
Hey, welcome back. Hey, guys. How's it going?
See ya.
You too.
Very excited to talk about this. So this is a, well, I'm going to say something wrong, maybe wrong, and you correct me. This is kind of a spinoff of Thundercats, or at least it's a complimentary cartoon to Thundercats. That in comic book form is going to be part of the greater Thunderverse. So is that?
Yeah, sort of. Like, I think, can you hear me first of all? Okay. I had to switch while I was in the waiting room. My headphones broke. I had to run and grab.
Oh my God.
I don't know what's going on today. So yeah. Silverhawks was more of like a kind of a sister show to the Thundercats back in the day. It wasn't, I don't think there was any crossover. I know in the newer Thundercat show that came out in 2011, there was at one point you can see Monstar in the background. comic wise, it's we're setting up it as its own thing, but obviously they're all part of that same sort of Rankin Bass Thunderverse, I guess. And so yeah, they're definitely connected. They're you know, they're from the same studio. They're very similar, you know, like similar design, similar animation. Silverhawks has the better theme song for sure, though. But
that's fired.
but they're definitely there's some sort of connective tissue. But like I said, in the comic, we're kind of starting Silverhawks off on its own. You know, a million people have already asked when a crossover is going to happen or if a crossover is going to happen, etc.
But isn't that crazy, by the way? Your first issue is coming out January 29th, and people are like, when are you going to get beyond? Okay, forget about the first issue. Get to the other thing that you're doing.
I mean, yes, but I understand the excitement and enthusiasm for it. I think a lot of people have sort of dreamed of the day that we might have a crossover between these two properties for... Jesus, look, these things are 37 and 38 years old.
Well, I looked this up earlier today just because I was curious, like, how many seasons the show ran or anything like that. It was 1986, and it was one season, and I read that, and I was like, oh, one season. I guess not a lot came out, but then I forgot how they...
65 episodes.
Yes, it's crazy.
That's nine seasons of the show.
I know. Could you imagine a show running 65 episodes?
Nowadays. No, it's crazy. And I even had to like look back. I went and looked back at old TV listings to like make sure I was remembering watching it every day, because I remember coming home from school and watching it every day. But this is one of those things where, like, as you get older, you're like, it was just like once a week. And I'm old and my memory is just screwed. But no, it was on every day, Monday through Friday. I think it was Silverhawks was on at 4:30, if I remember correctly, and Thundercats was before it at 4.
Wow.
Where I lived anyway.
Well, let's talk about... do you remember it, Pete?
Yeah, I definitely remember. I also remember it was kind of like, to me, it was like a GoBots Transformers situation where you kind of had to like...
you pick a team? Like, were you Thundercats or, you know, Silverhawks? But yeah, I remember the Silverhawks making more sense than Thundercats. Going back and rewatching Thundercats, I was just like, wow, this show is insane. Like, it doesn't make any sense at all.
I think they're both pretty crazy, like, in good ways. You know, I was a big fan of both of them growing up. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I had, you know, an allegiance to one over the other. I think they were both amazing. You know, at the time, I loved them both equally. I was really bummed out when Silverhawks ended. I do remember that. I never did take to. There was a follow up show called Tiger Sharks. It was like the third in the ranking.
Oh, wow.
Of the universe.
I remember the toys. I don't remember the show.
Huh. Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of those shows were around just to kind of serve the toy lines back then.
Yeah.
So that's not too surprising. I think the toys usually hit the shelves, I think, the week before the show came out.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that then. And I'm sure this is a tried and true question that you've dealt with a lot. But since these are properties that were basically made as extended toy commercials, no shade meant, because I know people love them, but there's not a lot behind them, or they went in a lot of crazy directions like we're talking about. Now you're coming in and you're bringing a shape to this. You're bringing a form to this, a world to this. So what do you look at with the old show, and what do you have to leave behind to make it work as a cohesive story in 2025?
So basically, when I look at the old show, you know, I went back and I watched, to 65. I have all the episodes.
Wow.
I went through that and I sort of started to pick up on storylines. One of the things that the show is really great at doing for kids is, like, you know, you have a like a setup, you have an action bit, but there wasn't really, especially in Silverhawks, I think Thundercats was a bit better about a through line sort of story that went through the entire series, whereas Silverhawks was more like an episode every day that almost resets at the end of it. There's a little
one
bit
and
of carry, yeah, there's a little bit of carryover, not a ton. There's not, like, the characters kind of come almost fully formed in the cartoon, right? Like, we have the first episode where Monstar breaks out of prison, and then we have folks on Earth being like, oh, we need someone to fight these. It's like, I've just got just the team for you. And you get like a very quick intro. It's like, he's Quicksilver. He's the lieutenant from Interplanetary Force 8. Blah, blah, blah. You know, you've got Bluegrass, etc. And it's literally like a 5-second intro for every character via exposition. And then they're just off. They're off and they meet Stargazer and they're doing space adventures and stuff. So one of the things that right out the gate that I wanted to do was spend a little bit more time with the characters before they become Silverhawks, because I want to, we want to show why each one of them becomes a Silverhawk, what the sort of stakes are for them, you know, who they are, like, just in terms of like character work. It's the thing you want to do. You want to, flesh these characters out before you kind of really just start throwing them into battle, because nobody's going to give a shit, right? Like, if they're just thrown straight into battle, you don't spend time with them, you don't have sort of any connection to them. So we're spending a little bit of time trying to slowly introduce each character. We're slowly building the team. This, I don't know if this counts as a spoiler, but our team doesn't fully form until the fourth issue. Mm-hmm. So we have that time where, you know, we spend time with Quicksilver, we spend time with Bluegrass, Copper Kid, Steelheart, Steelwheel, and Hotwing, and showing, you know, just kind of how they are impacted. So, you know, our first issue starts the same way as a cartoon. Monstar breaks out of prison. He goes on this sort of reign of terror. But from that, we get to see how it impacts each of the characters, you know, how, you know, Quicksilver in his job as an officer is impacted, and how, I won't get too much into Bluegrass and Hotwing, but, you know, they're a little bit different than, they're the same as they are in the cartoon, but, like, I've messed with their origin a little bit so that they're kind of friends before they come onto the show or onto the comic book, sorry. So yeah, it's mostly that, just spending a lot of time sort of fleshing it out. Silverhawk spends a lot of time in space where they talk about different planets that they're saving. We don't really see them in the cartoon a lot. We just see a lot of battles in empty places, or, you know, you know, in some planets we get to see, but like kind of barren surface. I really wanted to populate the galaxy and show that there are people who kind of depend on the Silverhawks to defend them from Monstar. One of the threads from the show that we picked up on and we're going to play around with a lot in the comic book is there is sort of the implication in the cartoon that Stargazer was part of a Silverhawks-like program before our Silverhawks. You know, and Condor was another character who was part of that. So we're going to introduce that team and spend some time with that team as well and find out, you know, how they initially took Monstar down. Now that he's back out of prison, how they're sort of dealing with that. So we're just like, it's a lot of me going into the cartoon and just pulling at threads all over the place and finding things that are of interest to me and sort of building upon those and then hoping then that they will be of interest to readers, which I think they will because, you know, I'm coming from it as, you know, I'm a fan of the show. And I'm trying to expand on the stuff that I love and really.
That's awesome. That's yeah. very exciting.
I have the world's dumbest question, but I'm going to ask it anyway just because I don't know the answer. Okay. Are they actually birds or are they just dressed like birds?
They're not birds. They basically, you know, get Robocopped into the Silverhawks program. It's not a one for one comparison, but they are partly metal, partly real. It's from, if you've heard the theme song, but yeah, they're half cyborg, half human anyway. So yeah, but they are people who have armor and they're called Hawks because they can fly through space with do have wings and such, but there are Hawk companions. So there's Tally Hawk, who's one of the Hawk companions of Quicksilver. And each member in the toy line had their own Hawk that weren't always in the cartoon. There was like, so we will have Tally Hawk in it, but not necessarily all the other ones at first. I want to kind of slowly, we don't want to rush into a crossover. Yeah. I don't want to do a book and introduce you to like 1,003 characters from the toy line right out of the gate. So we're, yeah, slowly, like you said, we're going to kind of earn those things as we go along.
Cool.
Go ahead, Pete, please.
Well, I just, you know, we're staring at a very impressive nerd wall you have behind you. Is there anything you want to point out or anything you're really proud of?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is all, so my way of stopping myself from buying too much comic book art is I only buy stuff from books that I've worked on.
Oh, wow.
So you can see down here, this is a bass. This is strictly here to make me look cool. I used to be in a band years ago, and I completely forgot how to play the bass. So there's there's a page from Ghost Rider for Aaron Carter.
Yeah.
There's a Gavin Guidry cover from, we did a book called There's Something Wrong with Patrick Todd.
Wow.
Alpha Flight by Scott Hepburn.
It's like your own personal timeline. Yeah. This is really cool.
So it's like, we got Iron Fist. We got one from Dead Man Logan that's got Glob on it, one of my favorite characters. A cover from Sheltered. I did a Ninja Turtles X-Files crossover. That's one of my very first things that's there. You can kind of barely see it there behind the moose. We got another Old Man Logan page, another Iron Fist. This is a cover. Oh, you can't see it all. There we go. Cover from Cluster, which is a book I wrote years ago, number one.
Wow, yeah.
By James Stokoe. And this is from X-Force. It's a Dylan Burnett page. It's a splash page where Strife comes through and he is going after Cable. And he's got his new Mutant Liberation Front. The cool thing about that page for me is actually... I realize you can barely see that on the screen there. I think it's from issue 4 of X-Force. I could be wrong. But that Mutant Liberation Front is partially made up of existing characters. But two of the characters in there are characters I created when I was 12. And then sort of trotted back out and decided to put into a comic book. That's my art. There's some more over here. I'm not going to move my laptop around because it's a bit of a mess in here right now.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah. Thank you for sharing.
No problem.
So you've been writing comics since you were 12, basically?
Yeah, well, you know, I wanted to be a comic artist originally. So when I was 12, I think I started when I was about 8. I would get dollar store sketchbooks and draw on them all the time and create characters. And yeah, I went to fine arts after school. Like I was really focused on being an artist. That was the end goal. That was the hope for me. And I think I self-published stuff for about 20 years, where I was writing and drawing, and then I stopped drawing after about 20 years because I realized actually, much like this bass here, I like the idea of being in a band much more than I like practicing and playing a musical instrument. Drawing, I love the idea of being able to draw and being an artist, etc. But it got to a point, like, you know, I went through fine arts, like I said. I practiced quite a bit, but I got to a point where I just did not enjoy it at all. And I really enjoyed writing. So I think about almost 15 years ago now, I stopped drawing and switched over to strictly writing. And it was in like 3 years after that, that I, 2 years after that, where I got my first publishing deal and started to make headway within the industry. And so, you know, clearly other people weren't feeling my art either.
Well, that had to be tough, man. That had to be a little.
It was fine. You know, it was more of a relief than it was tough. Like that moment where I kind of sat down. I was having a moment. It was actually on my birthday. I won't say which birthday, but I was like sitting down. I was like not super happy at my job. I had a job as a creative director, and I had been making some headway. I was lettering comics, and that was like my side hustle on top of my day job. That's how I'd pay for like self-publishing and stuff. I just had a day where I sat down and just kind of like took stock of everything, you know, had just tried to be honest about what I wanted to do going forward, what my hopes were. And I realized like that I think for the last 10 years of drawing, it was just that thing that I'd started out doing and just never questioned it. And then when I sat down and really, really examined what I want to do, I realized I just didn't want to draw anymore. I didn't get any enjoyment out of it, but I really enjoy sitting down behind the keyboard and writing and telling stories. And originally I only started writing because I didn't know writers. I needed something to draw. And it was over the years, that was the thing that I enjoyed most. And I took courses. I took, when I was in university, I took any sort of writing related program I could to sort of build those skills, and it just became a thing I like doing more than the art side.
Do you think it's something that you'll go back to at some point?
Absolutely not. No, not at all. I have like, and my wife gives me hell for it because like once every like 2 years, I'm like, I think I'm gonna start drawing again, and I go out and I buy like $100 worth of art supplies, and I come home and I draw half a thing. And I just shelve it, and then you know I end up recycling the paper, and my kid steals the pens, and then like 2 years later I go through the whole thing. It's actually same thing with that bass. Every 5 years I buy a new bass. I'm like, I'm gonna do it this time, and I never do. And so that's why I haven't gotten rid of this bass, because I need it there to be a reminder.
Don't get more bass.
It's a waste of money.
I did want to ask you about another project that got announced earlier today. You're doing Thundercats Lost, also in the Thunderverse for Dynamite. This is focusing on different Thundercats that are in the main series. It seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, is it like earlier in time?
Snarf?
No, I mean, there's a couple of Thundercats. They end up behind enemy lines and kind of have to fight their ways out, sort of like a Thundercats 11 or not Thundercats dozen. I don't know what I'm talking about. Ignore what I'm saying, please.
So yeah, Thundercats Lost is, so there's a bit of it that I'm going to be intentionally sort of dodgy about, because there are some things that will.
We don't want to get you in trouble.
That I don't want to give away, but it is featuring three of the Thundercats that were introduced in the second season of the cartoon. So it's Bengali, Lingso, and Pimera. And we have introduced two new Thundercats that Raffaello Bosco and I created together. He's the artist on the series. So there is a sort of snow leopard cat named Nico, who's sort of this super... She's she's scrappy. She's a soldier. She's like a son of like no bullshit sort of person. Yeah. Very tactically minded. Very not into taking anyone's shit.
Nice.
Very deadly. And then Ligon, who's the other character, who's a liger. If you guys are familiar with ligers, which yeah. Like, so he's got a lion father and a tiger mother. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I learned about research for this is that so you can have ligers or tigons, right? So one lion father, tiger mother. The other is a tiger father, mm-hmm. lion mother. Mm-hmm. But in our particular case, lion father, tiger mother, they don't pass down the growth inhibitors for these cats come from the opposite parents. So in lions, it comes from the mothers. Tigers, it comes from the fathers. So when you have a tiger or a lion father, this sounds like word salad right now. I apologize. But when you have a lion father and a tiger mother, they do not pass down a growth inhibitor. So ligers, which are the product, don't stop growing. They do eventually stop growing, but they end up becoming much, much larger than either parent. Huh. They're huge. And the same with our character Ligon. He's a liger character who's much larger than the rest of the tiger cats. But very, you know, he's kind of a gentle giant, a really fun character to write, and a bit of like he's sort of the moral compass for the team, nice. Or the moral center. So
well, I'm excited. This sounds very exciting, man. As someone who loved Thundercats, that's very cool to hear.
When you're creating a new Thundercat, is there a document somewhere just based on what you're saying where it's like, here are the Thundercats, here's the cats they are, and here are the available cats?
No, I don't think so. So if there is, I haven't seen it. And no, I just like, I had the idea that Nico was going to be a snow leopard. That was like kind of the first one I had. And there is in the show, there's a character named Snowman who has a like pet snow leopard. And I'm blanking on the snow leopard's name, but there isn't a human snow leopard character. Like, you know, character. They're not humans, a cat person. Yeah. There's no snow leopard Thundarian. There we go. So, and in terms of ligers, I don't think there has been one. As far as I was able to research.
Yeah.
But no, they were like, it was a pretty chill process. You know, the two of us just came up with these ideas. We sent them off and really like, it was a pretty easy process. They were into what we were doing. So it's nice and chill.
Awesome. That's impressive. I feel like if I would have done that, they would have been like, this is Panthro. I'd be like, oh, you caught me.
I have five ideas. Panthro. I have five ideas and they're all Panthro.
Panthro, yeah. Exactly.
I mean, honestly, I don't know like how many duplicates in terms of cat types there are, but the names, man, they already locked down all the good names.
Oh,
man.
Yeah.
And so that was the one that was tough to come up with names that would be hopefully somewhat memorable and interesting.
I did want to ask you about one more non-Thunderverse project, though. The
sure.
Displaced that came out recently.
Oh, yeah.
Loved that book. Great. Thanks. Sci-fi concept. I mean, yeah. Talking about Lost, I know we referenced that a lot when we were reviewing the book, but it was about a bunch of people who found themselves displaced from their town displaced from reality. It gets weirder and wilder and more upsetting from there. What was it like looking back, crafting this story, particularly with where it ended up at the end?
So that one was a weird one because it lived in my head for, God, like 15 years, I think. Not mm-hmm. quite 15 years, but it was an idea I came up with in 2008. And so I had originally pitched it as a book back in 2011. It was almost a book in 2011, but it hit this weird spot where like the publisher had notes for changes that they wanted, and we had kind of gone back and forth, and implementing the notes became something that I wasn't as excited about anymore. So we kind of pulled it back, because you know, the city that disappears in there is Oshawa. Oshawa is where I'm originally from. That's where I spent, I lived until I was a teenager. And so the story was largely about my own sort of relationship with the city and how much it would change every time I go back, and how much I would feel disconnected from the city every time I went back to visit. And part of it was, you know, when I was visiting there years and years ago, I ran into a guy I went to elementary school with, and I went up and I was like chatting to him. I'm like, "Hey, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah." And he's like, at one point he's like, I don't remember you at all. He's like, he didn't know who I was, which was like a bit of a gut punch. Sure. But it was, you know, it was funny because when that had happened, I was already kind of working on the story, and it was like just like perfect moment to really put me in the mindset of you know, this idea of being forgotten and no one knowing you existed. So anyway, I worked on this for, like I said, about 15 years. And so when it finally started to come together, when we released it, a lot of it was kind of already there because I've been carrying it around for so long. Mm. There was, you know, I had hopes that we could keep the story going for a bit longer. There was other stuff I want to touch on, and maybe we'll get a chance to come back and do that later on. But as it sits now with the 5 issues, I think it's a complete story. I think I kind of said the things that I wanted to say in there. I think I kind of made peace with my relationship with the city of Oshawa, where, you know, I actually, when the book came out, I went and did a signing in Oshawa for it, which was a really incredible experience. It was 4 hours, and it was wow. Like the entire time, like when the store originally wanted to book me for 4 hours, you know, book it for 4 hours, I thought it was insane, because usually 2 hours is good, right? But mm-hmm. it was nonstop. People coming by, people were very excited about it. I ended up getting a letter from the mayor of Oshawa over it, wow. Which is kind of cool. So, but for me, it, you know, it came together exactly how I wanted. Luca Castellinguida, the artist on it, was an incredible collaborator on the process. He lives in Italy, so he's never actually seen Oshawa. So I had to send him, you know, a ton of reference for Oshawa. You know, I don't know. And boom, they were great. I'm really happy with how that book came together. You know, it's one that I am immensely proud of.
Cool. Well, I love that book. It was great. Just before we wrap up here, though, I did have one last question for you. When is Silverhawks going to cross over with Thundercats?
I haven't heard that question before. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that we'll ever do that. I don't know that there's any sort of demand for it.
Yeah, more seriously, is there anything you want to plug otherwise, Ed? Anything?
I mean, really, I just ask people to, you know, on both of these projects with Silverhawks, if you're interested, just, you know, kind of let your comic book store know. I want to hopefully ensure that Silverhawks has a healthy and long life. And the same with the Thundercats Lost. I didn't really talk about the story too much, but it's a very exciting sort of story. One of you mentioned already, it's like they're dropped behind enemy lines and have to survive. It's about a completely sort of different. So the Thundercats, if you follow the book, they're on a mission trying to save Thundera or set up a new world. And our cats are on a similar mission to save the planet. But we'll quickly find out that there's maybe some more sinister undertones to what they're doing. It's a darker book to the mainline Thundercats. We've been kind of talking about it as sort of like the JLA, Suicide Squad, or X-Men, X-Force sort of
awesome
coupling of books.
Love cool. it. Ed, congratulations on everything. Can't wait to read all of those books, and happy holidays.
All right, you too. Thank you very much for having me.
Take care.
See ya.
All right. There was Ed Bryson and the books we mentioned. Silverhawks, January 29th from Dynamite, and Thundercats Lost is also coming from Dynamite in March. Also, highly recommend The Displaced from Boom Studios.
Yeah.
Great book. I should have checked this beforehand. I'm sure you can probably pick it up and trade. If not, pick it up and trade whatever, because it's really good. And we are going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch, and we will get to them. This is your last chance to ask us questions in 2024. If you have any questions about 2025, happy to answer those as well. Pete, what you drinking? You drinking Garage again?
That's right. Garage beer, man. You don't have to have a garage to enjoy Garage beer.
Do they pay you? Is that what's going on here?
No, I wish. That'd be sweet.
Oh, all right. Stanley, wrong one. Thank you, Apex Capex. Merry Christmas. Stanley says, any fun holiday plans?
I mean, if you think spending time with your family is fun, then hell yeah.
I'm getting certain implications there, Pete.
Huh.
Do you find spending time with your family fun?
Yes. Yeah.
Great.
I mean, it depends. You know what I mean?
All right. My kids are going to be home starting Saturday, running through like January 3rd or something like that.
Wow.
So that should be cool. I don't know.
It seems like you're not happy about it. It seems
we don't really long. Talk this morning. I was like, do you want to have a museum week where we go to a museum every day? Do you want to do anything? And they were like, I don't know. So,
Dad, leave me alone, man.
What on,
God, Dad, stop talking God. To me.
Oh. The answer is no. No fun.
Sounds like your
plans.
Kids are at a great age.
Yeah. No. They are great. I love them. It's my daughter's birthday today. I'm avoiding to go do the show. That's Justin. People are asking where Justin is. Justin is celebrating my daughter's birthday.
That sounds weird. That sounds really weird.
Stray Bean says, excited about the Superman poster? Pete, have you seen the Superman poster yet?
Nope.
Great. Okay, I am. It is... they put out a little teaser for the trailer for James Gunn's Superman that's dropping on Thursday. The poster is David Cornsweet in the Superman suit flying up. It has shades of the blur effect from the original Superman 1978 poster, which I thought was a nice little tribute. And the tagline is "Look Up," which is a great tagline for Superman. But, and you'll appreciate this, Pete, every time I see Look Up or James Gunn does Look Up, I keep thinking, look up here, look up here, from the Three Amigos.
Up here, you two, up here.
Yep.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Anyway, I'm excited about
it. I think
of
the, I don't know what movie that was, where they're like, don't look up, and they all have hats, and there's like this meteor or something, and they're all like protesting, like, don't look up. It's like a...
The name of the movie is Don't Look Up.
Oh, is it?
I believe so.
Oh, interesting.
Huh. All right.
Jonah Hill? That Jonah Hill movie?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Schoikler says, what songs would be on different superheroes fun time playlists? You know, Ben Grimm has Hot Chocolate on his, and Frank Castle loves flugelhorn-based smooth jazz, but what about other heroes? Neither of those sound right to me.
I don't know. Seems like he nailed it.
I don't... Punisher have a fun time list?
I don't know. Maybe Frank Castle listens to Frank Sinatra. You know what I mean? Who knows?
Probably.
Maybe before he murders a bunch of people, he likes kind of listen to Mozart.
Or maybe he puts on like a spooky Halloween sounds album or something like that. He's like, the only thing I feel okay with is coffin creaks. Gotta hear coffin creaks to feel okay, to feel normal. Oh, God. Well, what about other heroes? What would be on their fun time playlist? Human Torch would have Hot to Go. That's my answer.
Oh, wow. Look at you, how proud you are of pulling that out of your shorts.
No, it made me feel bad to even say.
I don't know. You would like to think that maybe, like Wolverine listens to heavy metal before he goes, pumps himself up,
Yeah, I bet his brain is a soup of things that he's heard on jukeboxes and bars. It's surprising that he's not like humming, I don't know, Cotton Eye Joe or whatever when he's killing people or something. What are they playing bars? I haven't been in a bar in a while.
I mean, he's so old, you'd think he'd probably pick something that was...
Frank Sinatra.
Well, I was thinking like 30s or something, but all right.
Yeah, okay. I don't know that, man. You lost me. Michael Tillman says, first draft episode of 2025. What are we picking this time around? Please say G.I. Joe teams. Please say G.I. Joe teams. So I will say, I didn't mention this earlier because we haven't taped it yet.
Oh, my God. G.I. Joe teams would be so much fun. But you make fun of it. It would be fun for me.
It would be a nightmare. And me and Justin would have no idea what we were doing.
You would guys would just make fun of me the whole time. That would be kind of a nightmare. Think about it. Well, I would love to pick a G.I. Joe team because that would be awesome.
We did talk about... Wait, what did we talk about? So we did an X-Men draft that people could check out. We did a Justice League draft.
Oh, yeah.
There was something we were talking about for third. Was it Avengers? I don't think it was Avengers.
I don't remember.
I don't know. We definitely talked about doing a third one, and we do want to do a third one for sure. Only thing I was going to mention, which is not answering your question, but when we're not doing live shows, we will be releasing our best comic books of the year, which we normally, I really like doing that on the live show, but the way this timed out with having guests this week and Justin off, it didn't quite work out. So we will do that. JT says his team would be Snow Job, Outhouse, and Dick Whiting. Yes, that's probably correct. I would just choose barbecue.
Tillman, great callback.
Stray Bean says, what are your favorite comic books of 1994? Probably something with Strife, I'm going to say, based on
what it was saying. I was big into like Captain America comics back then.
Eddie C says, any thoughts on Creature Commandos? I will plug that on our Sons of a Gun DC podcast. We've been recapping the episodes. So plenty of thoughts there. But overview, Pete, you've been having a great time so far.
I love this show. I think it's a blast. I'm having a great time.
Yeah. I like it. I am also having a good time. I like the flashbacks. It feels a little safe to me in terms of James Gunn stuff, but I don't know. It's fun. I like a good cartoon. So there you go. Schreckler says, what would be in a comic book club advent calendar? Probably comic books.
Oh yeah. Little comic books.
Tiny little folded up comic books.
Bazooka Joe wrappers.
Mm-hmm. Stanley say, did you watch and love the Kraven movie? I did see Kraven in theaters. Did you see Kraven, Pete?
No, that looks awful. I'm not going to see that.
It's a comic book movie. You have an obligation news reporter and professional
critic. Beautiful time where there is so much comic book stuff. I no longer feel like I have to go every time to support. You know, there's just so much. Mm-hmm. You know,
tell
I
you what, that's what the rest of the world felt as well, Pete. And I did not feel that Thursday afternoon at 2 p.m. at the first showing at the Alpine Cinema in Brooklyn, one of the worst theaters in Brooklyn. But I'll tell you what, real cheap tickets. Me and the five other people in the theater watched it.
Were you all sitting right next to each other, or did you spread out?
No, all next to each other, holding hands, sharing popcorn. We each got different snacks, so we didn't.
Oh, that's
one guy got Twizzlers, one got Snowcats.
Oh, that's a dream right there. That's living the dream.
Some of them may have just wandered in from the outside and not bought tickets. I honestly don't know. But yes, six people Thursday at 2 p.m. They actually seemed to be having a good time. There was a lot of like, oh shit, get him, Kraven, which was my favorite part of the movie.
Oh, nice.
It's just boring. I found it boring. And that to me is like,
that's maybe, the last thing it should be.
That's like almost worse than a bad movie is a boring movie is what struck me while I was watching that. And it was the same thing with Morbius, which like Morbius was not good, but mostly it was just a grueling slog to get through. Mm-hmm. And this is the same thing. It's just like, nothing makes any sense. There's a couple of like little highlights of people that seem to be having fun, but
was there a, it wasn't like the editors didn't watch the movie. It's not like as bad as Green Lantern as far as
no,
like...
it mostly kind of holds together other than it being a bad story. And the second half of the movie is all very concerned with setting up several other movies that are never in a million years going to happen.
Oh, wow.
And then there's some bad CGI. There's a bad CGI bear. The rhino looks terrible.
Oh, no.
But, and the whole thing, it
is
just
Paul
feels
Giamatti
like...
Paul Giamatti the rhino?
No, sadly. Paul Giamatti is still the best rhino.
Yeah.
What does he say? No, he's like, come and get me, Spider-Man.
He's so great.
Great stuff. So great. That's what I want, though. Like, I would much rather watch Amazing Spider-Man 2, an unequivocally bad movie, than watch Kraven again, because Kraven, like, I almost fell asleep at several points. Amazing wow. Spider-Man 2, I'm like, why is he talking like that? Why is he in Paul Giamatti's tiny head in a rhino suit? Why is Jamie Foxx doing Itsy Bitsy Spider right now while he's chasing Spider-Man? And this is stupid. But at least, like, there's something going on there that even you could make fun of. And this just didn't have it. It was a real bummer. Not a good movie. Do not recommend it. Oh, good call here from over on Twitch. Hartford1988 says, Booster Gold, definitely Duran Duran.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Hartford, good call there.
Straight Beat says, what about a TMNT draft? I choose Mikey, Leo, Ralph, and Dottie. Great.
Great call there. You got to put Casey Jones on your list. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're not going to draft Rocksteady or Bebop? All right.
We got a follow-up here from Schweikler just to keep talking about the Sony stuff. Why do you think the Sony comic movies are all bad in the same way?
Because they're under the same direction. That's probably why.
Yes. Yeah. Well, they're not the same director, but yeah.
No, but I mean the same studio is, yeah, pulling the strings.
There are people there who have been doing this since like the 90s and 2000s, and they think this is the way you do comic book movies. Like the thing that I was going to say about Kraven, spoilers, I guess, but he gets his powers through a combination of a magic formula and also lion blood falling into his veins. Like a lion is dripping blood and the lion...
into his veins? Like his veins are just open?
As simply as possible, there's this big lion who approaches him and he's like, I'm not going to shoot the lion. And then his dad, Russell Crowe, shoots the lion. Lion goes crazy.
Did you say his dad, Russell Crowe?
Russell Crowe, yes.
Is in this movie?
Plays his dad, yeah.
Wow.
Yes. But he gets carried by the lion and sort of like ripped to shreds by the lion. But the lion was also shot. So the lion bleeds inside of his wounds. So he gets lion blood in there at the same time as Calypso, played by the young actress who later becomes Ariana DeBose, gives him a magic voodoo formula that gives him lion powers, I guess. And that's the sort of thing where it's like, sure, in 1996, I might have given this a pass, but now we don't do that anymore. Yes, he had sex with a lion. They exchanged fluids, exactly.
Oh, man, that's hilarious.
Yeah. Anyway, my point being that, like, they're just stuck in this mode of that. It worked with Venom, so they're like, great, it'll work with literally anything. But Venom was its own kind of crazy, and they don't get it. Like, it's the same reason they saw the memes of Morbius and people being like, hey, you really got to re-release Morbius in theaters. And they're like, sounds good. And they did it, and nobody went to see it. They're not in on the joke. That's the problem. Josh Citizen says, my kid loves the Spidey show. How do I explain Artem Zola to her? Like in terms of him being a Nazi, I think just say he's a villain with a TV face. Does that work?
Yeah. I'd say, you know, sometimes, bad people get caught in computers and, you know, this is an example of that.
Yep. Exactly. It's a real lawnmower man type.
Yeah, it's a whole lawnmower. I mean, just go to Lawnmower Man.
Watch Lawnmower Man, and then she'll get it.
Yeah,
she'll get it. She'll get it. Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Josh. Thank you, everybody, for all of your questions. We appreciate it. And now we're going to move to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part where we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online. Because if you had $25, you'd want to go to a comic book shop and get yourself some freaking comics.
Yeah. So all we need. Stray Beans says, I'll do it immediately. Wow. Ooh, a rare YouTube beans. Jumping on it.
The tube. Okay. What's up?
All right. Are you going to pay tribute to 2024 RIP?
Oh, man. Not, our last... You said it like that. I should have done that, but I didn't.
All right.
All right, today's trivia is about the impressive comic book Pocket Full of Rain and a small nod to the legend Ron Ely, R.I.P. Tarzan. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. It's probably Ely, now that I think about it, now that I say it out loud. Here we go. Question number one, what is the name of the Norwegian cartoonist who wrote this comic? Is it A, Jason, B, is that guy glitching or something? C, Paul Frees. I ruined that, but what are you going to do?
Yeah. You could say, we got, is one A?
Yes, one is A. He's trying to game me here, as I see, by already selecting his things. But here we go. Question number two. Jason has won a Harvey Award as well as how many Eisners for his work? Is it A, 2, B, whatever, I can't wait for you to be a dick in movies like Die Hard and Breakfast Club, or C, Paul Gleason?
Oh, that wasn't a pun on his name. That was just who he is.
That's right.
Hmm. Shaking it up, Pete. You're shaking it up.
Shaking it up.
Yeah. He did say B in advance, but I'm going to guess he's going to guess A.
Yeah, because he said A there.
B number of Eisner.
It's A, the number of Eisners, which is 2. The only one that would make sense. Yeah. Here we go. I'll give that to him because, he was kind of correct in the second part there. Here we go. Last one. Jason usually draws animals in his comics, but the twist in this one is he has a lot of blank stories in it. Is it A, human stories, B, listen closely, Bob, C, Bob Harkes?
Wow, old-timey with the pun there.
There we go.
Hark, the herald angels sing.
There,
there we go.
Now we get the holidays in there.
Oh, Schoichler has a guess for the movie.
He nailed it.
Okay.
Yeah, guy's good.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to guess Stray Beans will probably get it.
He will probably say A eventually, yeah.
Eventually. YouTube's on a delay.
Yeah.
As we know. You got to go over to Twitch, man. Check out Twitch.
Yeah, Twitch is where it's at.
It's on time. Stray Beans, assuming you got A, because you did guess that in advance, the movie is not Periscope Down, but you did get a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email and we'll get that to you. Pete, is the movie you're paying tribute to Doc Savage, the Man of Bronze?
Yeah, the 1975 cult classic.
Amazing. All right.
Schoichler.
One more time. New comics are coming out. One more time. Two more times, actually. Several more times. They're really coming out on Christmas, which is crazy to me. I don't know how that's going to work.
It's like two Christmases.
Oh. It's like, yes, you can open your Christmas presents, then go to the comic book store.
Comic shop. Yeah, exactly. Presents, all new presents right
more
there.
Presents.
Yeah.
Anyway, what are you looking forward to that's coming out this week?
I tell you, I'm looking forward to The Moon is Following Us, number 4. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to The New Gods, number 1. Mm-hmm. And I'm also looking forward to Psylocke, number 2.
Good calls, all. I am looking forward to Challengers of the Unknown, number 1. Curious to see what DC does with that now that Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman are on the team. Also, From the World of Minor Threats, Barfly, number 4, bringing that to a close from Kyle Starks and Ryan Brown. And I'm very curious to check out, did you mention Deadly Tales of the Gunslinger Spawn?
No, but I cannot wait to read that.
Yeah, Jimmy Pabbiati doing westerns again.
Come on.
That's kind of a no-brainer. So there you
Jonah
go.
Jonah Hex back in the day. Come on, that was great stuff.
Come on. And folks, that is it for this week's show. Couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Neil Klein for coming on to talk about Kings and Canvas. You can get that out at some point, either this week or next week, from Outland Entertainment and CX Publishing. Ed Bryson for talking about Silver Hawks, which is out January 29th from Dynamite, and also Thundercats Lost, out in March from Dynamite. As mentioned, we are going to be off. No show for the next 2 weeks. Until January 7th, we will be back with Jeff Parker to talk about Zootopia. Oh. And Charles Soule and Ryan Brown will be here to talk about their new book, The Lucky Devils. And mentioning once again, you can check us out in New Orleans on January 10th and 11th. So please do come down. And we'll have some beignets. I think that's what you do.
Yeah,
there.
Man.
Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast. Check that out Monday through Friday. Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast that is recapping Creature Commandos. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. You can subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the ad of your choice. Comic Book Club on Blue Sky. Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, Happy New Year!
Take care of yourself out there.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.